Do you see those retreating Russians? Follow them. Major General Kurt von Morgan, 3rd Reserve Division, German 8th Army, Kurkin, East Prussia, August 28th, 1914. Hey folks, welcome to the Battles of the First World War podcast and Tannenberg, Part 3, Flank and Collision. Before we begin the episode, a quick note about the intro music and the outgoing music at the end of this episode. That music comes courtesy of listener Brian, who created these two pieces of music and generously shared them with the podcast. Brian creates music under the name Ashlingach on the Bandcamp website. Links to his music will be posted in the episode notes. Hope you enjoy. Okay, if you have the chance, follow this episode with Google Maps. There, you will be able to type in the old German place names I'll be using, and Google Maps will take you to the new Polish, Russian, or Lithuanian name, as the place will be known today. Following the double dose of bad news, the first of the German drubbing at Gumbinnen, and the second that a massive Russian field army was advancing north out of the Polish salient, German 8th Army Commander General Maximilian von Prittwitz und Gaffron called the German Oberste Heeresleitung in Koblenz. Prittwitz didn't even talk to his staff. He informed General Helmuth von Moltke that the situation in East Prussia was fast collapsing and that he was pulling the 8th Army back behind the River Vistula immediately. A significant portion of East Prussia, the heart of Prussian-led Germany, would be abandoned to the oncoming Russian hordes. Moltke ordered that the Vistula line be held no matter the cost. When Prittwitz asked what men he was supposed to use, as he no longer had enough, Moltke replied coldly that these details were Prittwitz's problems. Moltke couldn't be expected to fight the 8th Army's battles all the way from the Western Front. It is odd that even before Prittwitz called OHL with his panicked call for retreat, he was already having von François's 1st Corps begin the movements necessary to redeploy to the south. 1st Corps would come up on the 20th Corps' right. The Russian 2nd Army, under General Alexander Samsonov, had entered East Prussia much further west than had been anticipated, and it was dawning on the 8th Army's leadership that there might not be time to retreat to the Vistula. The Russians might get there first. With the help of his first general staff officer, Lieutenant Colonel Max Hoffmann, Prittwitz began shuttling and shifting his forces to deal with the new threat to the south. 1st Corps would deploy on 20th Corps' right flank. Von Below's 1st Reserve Corps would hold against the Russian 1st Army, and von Mackensen's disorganized 17th Corps would act as a ready reserve. These were Prittwitz's last acts as commander of the 8th Army. At the time, Moltke saw the shifting of troops as the manic thrashing of a commander who had lost control. It was actually the very rough staging of German forces for their upcoming success at the Battle of Tannenberg. 8th Army was already getting itself back together after the shock of Gumbinnen. But again, this was the end of the road for Prittwitz. Moltke relieved him of command. On August 23rd, a new commander and new chief of staff were brought in. The new chief of staff for the 8th Army had already been chosen on August 22nd, even before Prittwitz and his guy had been sacked. It would be a name that would come to mean the coming silent dictatorship of Germany's later war years. None other than Major General Erich Ludendorff. Riding high on his stunning victory at the Belgian city of Liège, Ludendorff was clearly the man to save the 8th Army from what appeared to be an impending disaster. But Ludendorff was exceedingly tough to work with. Dennis Showalter describes him in his book Tannenberg as, quote, arrogant, touchy, and humorless, end quote. Ludendorff was a cold man who purposely kept himself distant from people. He saw himself as largely superior to everyone around him. With these winning personality traits, finding a commander who could tolerate all of this was going to be key. They found it in retired General der Infanterie Paul von Benneckendorff und Hindenburg, another man who would come to play a decisive role in Germany's conduct of the Great War and beyond. Hindenburg, restless in his retirement as this new war began, had asked to be recalled if he was needed. Tall and imposing, seen as imperturbable but militarily shrewd, he was now needed. Ludendorff literally picked him up by train on the way out east. They arrived in theater on the evening of August 23rd. Russian General Alexander Samsonov's Second Army looked like a major threat to the German situation in East Prussia. Advancing up from Russian Poland, the Germans would be hard-pressed to shift troops behind the Masurian Lakes to defend against it and Pavel Rennenkamp's Russian First Army now around Gumbinnen. If the Second Army was allowed to march deep into German territory, the Eighth Army could shortly find itself surrounded. Interpreting a Russian Army High Command recommendation as an order, Northwest Front Commander General Yakov Zhilinsky ordered Samsonov to shift his army's march to the west. This would have the Second Army push south of the Masurian Lakes. Samsonov followed the orders, but in his own way, marching northwest across the Polish-German border and then turning north. His Second Corps would stay on its original course towards the Masurian Lakes so it could maintain flank security on the Second Army's right and to maintain contact with the First Army to the north. When questioned about all this by Zhilinsky, Samsonov replied that he needed, quote-unquote, freedom to maneuver. The army commander also defended his actions by stating that this allowed his army to flank the Germans while staying out of a frontal collision with them. The Russian Second Army's advance was indeed a threat to German East Prussia, but its advance came with its own massive problems. Supplies were delivered irregularly, and as the advance continued deeper into enemy territory, it became ever harder to get supplies up to the advance lines. Telephone and telegraph lines, when they weren't cut to begin with, were forever inadequate. This led General Samsonov, his corps commanders, and leadership at most levels to communicate by radio. As we discussed in Episode 2, this wasn't an uncommon practice amongst the Russians and the Germans. What was more uncommon was that the Germans would happen to intercept so many Russian radio messages. Another issue facing Samsonov and his Second Army was that of the whereabouts of the enemy. The German Empire's eastern provinces were huge tracts of land, and so there were wide open spaces between the Russians and the Germans. Russian cavalry, much like their German counterparts, tended to be poorly trained and underused as reconnaissance elements. The horsemen, more often than not, saw themselves on flank security. Finding the enemy was a daunting task. But the enemy was found on August 22nd at Neidenburg, known today as Nidzhitsa, as the Russian Second Army marched northwest with four infantry corps from left to right, the 1st, the 15th, the 13th, and the 6th. Germans had been reported in both Neidenburg and Ortelsburg, roughly 50 kilometers to the northeast of Neidenburg. Samsonov ordered his right flank corps, the 6th, to take Ortelsburg. His center-right corps, the 13th, would support the 6th Corps. The two left corps, the 1st on the left, and the 15th Corps as center-left of Samsonov's line, would take Neidenburg and the town of Soldau to the southwest. The Russians marched into Neidenburg from the south and southeast as throngs of terrified civilians emptied out of the town at its northern end. These civilians encountered a thrill-seeking German lieutenant in command of a bicycle unit and told him of the foreign invaders. Leutnant Burscher von Seyer zum Weißenstein led his men down the road until they ran into Russian scouts. Shots were fired, and the Russians were shot down. The noise brought a detachment of Cossack horsemen galloping out of the town and into Leutnant Weißenstein's rifles. Shots cracked as massed fire punched the Russian cavalry troopers off their steeds. With near 50% losses, the Russian commander pulled his remaining men back into Neidenburg, and the Germans followed cautiously. Weißenstein's men rode through the town until they found another squadron of horsemen at the town train station, just sitting down to eat their lunch. The Germans opened fire and shot down anything that moved. When the surviving Russians scattered, Leutnant Weißenstein and his men added insult to injury. They ate the Russians' food before pulling out of the town. Neidenburg paid a heavy price for the German raid. The Russians later fired some 300 artillery shells into the town center, destroying a good portion of the town. Samsonov interpreted the German raids pulling out of Neidenburg as a general retreat, and he shifted his axis of advance westward to follow the enemy. This increased the distance between the 2nd and 1st armies and could potentially hurt an effort by Rennenkampf to assist Samsonov. But the risk was seen as acceptable. There was an opportunity here to cut off the German retreat and destroy their forces. After that, the road into Berlin would be open. The Russians ran into the main German formation in the area the next day, when their 8th Division attacked units of the German 20th Corps between Lana and Orlau villages north of Neidenburg. Commanding the 20th Corps was Lieutenant General Friedrich Nikolaus von Scholz, a career military man seen as a calm and personable character known for his sense of humor. Schlieffen himself had once told him in his typical sarcastic and caustic manner, "Go play with your frontier security," himself believing the Russian threat to be a joke. Von Scholz followed his commander's orders. He trained his troops to a high degree of readiness. The Germans were highly trained, but still green to modern warfare. They rushed into the fray wildly, and as a result, casualties were heavy as Russian rifle and machine gun fire tore into their ranks. The Russians gave as good as they got, and in one corner of the wide battlefield, a desperate fight developed for the Russian 29th Regiment's flag. As Dennis Showalter wrote, quote, "At the end, rifle butts, fists, and teeth settled the issue. The staff fell into German hands. The colors, torn away in the melee, disappeared," end quote. In Orlau and Lana proper, brutal house-to-house fighting raged. in Lana, a battalion of German Jaegers, cracked shots, as all of them were local hunters, shot down several Russian assaults until they were overwhelmed. The fighting then turned hand to hand until dark, when a surviving NCO pulled what men he could back to German lines. The Russians held Lana, choked with corpses and with nearly the entire village on fire. Schultz wanted to counterattack the next morning, but he discovered that his units were too disorganized from the day's fighting to mount a serious attack. Army headquarters also told him that while General von Francois was on his way with his first corps, he wouldn't reach Schultz's right flank until the 26th. Schultz therefore needed to preserve his strength. Schultz worried about his left flank, however. His worries were justified when the German garrison way up north at Königsberg intercepted orders for the Russian 13th Corps to try to outflank the German 20th Corps, and the German line was pulled back. The Russians, though, had also taken a beating the day before in fighting Schultz's troops, and they let the opportunity pass. The Germans were given the chance to rest and refit on August 24th. On the 25th, another radio intercept was made by the Germans, this time capturing orders from General Rennenkampf's headquarters. The message told 1st Army units to advance to a line running from Gerdauen to Allenburg to Wehlau, a line facing the German fortress of Königsberg. That line guaranteed that Rennenkampf's forces would be too far away to help 2nd Army anytime soon. To the south, near the invasion point of the Russian 2nd Army, German General Hermann von Francois and his German 1st Corps received orders to attack the Russian 1st Corps near the village of Uzdow. The Russian 1st Corps was serving as the left flank guard for Samsonov's army, and von Francois was to hit them to begin turning their flank. Von Francois worried about his own right flank, and he was to attack west to east. Also, half of his artillery was still being shuttled down to him by desperate train conductors. He protested to Hindenburg and Ludendorff that he should attack south and then towards the northeast, towards Soldau. That, at least, would give him a chance to try to outflank the Russians. Ludendorff and Hindenburg knew about von Francois and his attitude. As the new commanders on the scene, however, this was a test from an insubordinate subordinate that needed to be dealt with right away. Their commands could not be questioned, not at this time, not ever. Von Francois was told that if he didn't follow orders, they would find someone who would. Francois was hard-headed and stubborn as all hell, but he knew when it was time to back down. And so he did. More communications between the Russians were picked up by the Germans, including orders from General Samsonov himself telling his 13th Corps commander where the 2nd Army's units would be on the 25th. This allowed the Germans to plan around what they interpreted from these dispositions. Samsonov was marching his army deeper westward in order to cast a wider net with 1st Army to the north. Aware that German units were retreating south from Gumbinnen, Samsonov dispatched his 6th Corps north to Bischofsburg. While 6th Corps served as his right flank, Samsonov was beginning to dangerously spread his forces wide. To deal with the Russians headed towards Bischofsburg, Hindenburg and Ludendorff ordered their Ostgruppe, as the 17th and 1st Reserve Corps were known in HQ, to attack them. Opposite the Russian center, Lieutenant General von Schultz still felt his left flank was under threat, so he shifted troops from his right over to his left to shore up that part of his line. To the south, von Francois was slow to move on his orders. He didn't pass down his movement and attack orders until formally receiving his own, despite verbal confirmations that had been agreed upon hours before. No one would be able to say he wasn't following orders, but anyone above the age of a child would see that he was clearly dragging his feet. Von Francois wanted to do it his way. His troops attacked on the morning of the 25th, taking the entire first half of the day to capture the town of Sieben near the Polish border. Ludendorff raged at the slow progress, but ultimately had to give in to his corps commander. He could tell that Von Francois was taking his time to gather up his men and guns. Von Schultz held his line on the 26th, in an action that surely showed a psychopathic devotion to the cause. Schultz's chief of staff, Colonel Hell, ordered the corps artillery to shell his own house in Grossgrieben when he heard the Russians had commandeered it. While the name Colonel Hell probably sounds pretty badass to us, you should know that the word Hell in German means bright. During the course of the morning fighting, von Schultz saw that a gap was opening in the Russian lines before him. It was happening at a natural seam in the Russian line, at the left flank of the corps in front of him, and at the right flank of the Russian First Corps facing von Francois to the south. With 8th Army's approval, Schultz launched his 41st Division and an attached brigade at the gap. The attack came in the area of Lake Kovnatkin, known today as Jezioro Kovnatki. The inexperienced Germans rushed in with wild enthusiasm, crashing into the Russian 2nd Division. Frontal assaults led by eager officers quickly created massive casualty lists and leaderless companies and platoons, but the Germans kept attacking. German gunners wheeled their guns practically into the front line with the infantry, firing at Russian positions from mere meters away. The Russian 2nd Division began to crack and crumble, and after an attempted counterattack was scythed down by machine guns, the division simply collapsed. Up on the German 20th Corps' left flank, the German 3rd Reserve Division, under Major General Kurt von Morgan, had been ordered to attack Hohenstein, known today as Olsteneck. But von Morgan also had an independent streak, and he waited for the Russians to commit to an attack before committing his own forces. Morgan was on the watch for his own flanks, and he didn't want to set himself up for failure. Further north, von Mackensen and von Bailoff's Ostgruppe had been ordered on the night of the 25th to attack the Russian 6th Corps at Bischofsburg. Mackensen's troops were marching hard to be able to hit the Russians on their right side, while Bailoff's reservists had a long, wide march to seal off a potential escape route. Due to these requirements and the timing of issued orders, Mackensen's 17th and Bailoff's 1st Reserve Corps would be attacking at different times. This was dangerous, as it could allow the Russians to focus on the Germans one corps at a time. Russian Lieutenant General Blagoveshchensky and his 6th Corps were in no position to take advantage of the Germans' poor timing, however. Blagoveshchensky was lurching from one order to the next from Samsonov. First, 6th Corps was to move up and take Bischofsburg. Then, a new order, leave a screen instead at Bischofsburg and march west to Allenstein. A third set of orders that never reached him instructed him to scratch that second set of orders and continue with the first mission to Bischofsburg. In a head-scratching move, Blagoveshchensky sent no cavalry assets forward for reconnaissance. Von Mackensen's 36th Division ran into the Russians at Lautern village as the sun rose on the 26th. These men, now blooded at Gumbinen, came into contact with the enemy and then dug in until their sister 35th Division could come in on their left. The Russians opposite them were aggressive, though, and they searched out the German left flank eagerly. It took German 77mm gun crews rushing their guns to the left flank to hold the Russians back. The 35th Division was nowhere to be seen. Its commander had declared his men too tired to reach the battlefield before mid-afternoon. Bailov marched his troops around Lake Dadai to the south to hit the Russians from the rear. At the same time, the Russian 16th Division was marching towards Allenstein, and the Russian 4th Division had dispatched a brigade to come up and hit the German 36th Division's left again. Bailov's reservists had marched around Lake Dadai with cavalry out ahead, keeping an eye on the Russians, and they came into the area without any resistance. As the Russian brigade marched to its new line, it ran into von Bailov's troops. The Russian brigade immediately dug itself in, and as the German reserve troops attacked, they faced a scythe of machine gun fire that tore deep into their ranks. These Germans were older men, generally less given to the heroics of their kid brothers, but they kept the pressure on by bringing up guns to simply obliterate the Russians out of their gun nests. The enemy broke when German officers led infantry charges straight at them with swords drawn. The Russian 6th Corps now began to buckle and break. The German 36th Division attacked carefully against the remaining Russian 4th Division brigade facing them, plastering them with heavy artillery before advancing. The Russian 16th Division was ordered to turn around and return to the Bischofsburg area, only to walk into the guns of von Bailov's 1st Reserve Corps artillerymen. The survivors of the Russian 16th Division fled the battle area as shells rained down amongst their ranks. The 4th Division disintegrated. The remnants of the 6th Corps fled some 30 kilometers away over the next 2 days, removing it entirely from the Tannenberg battlefield. Lieutenant General Blagoveshchensky didn't update 2nd Army headquarters until early the next morning, after several crucial hours had passed. On the other side, Bailov's and Mackensen's corps were not allowed to pursue. There was a fear that Rennenkampf's 1st Army could make moves to come lumbering down to the battle zone. But with the Russian 6th Corps in retreat, it was out of the fight. With it went the Russian 2nd Army's right flank guard. The next morning came the assault on the 2nd Army's left flank guard. By the morning of the 27th, Lieutenant General Hermann von Francois had his men and his guns together, as well as a supporting detachment from von Scholz's 20th Corps. The 8th Army's plan was for the 1st Corps to take Uzdau and then strike east for Neidenburg. This would give the opportunity to outflank the Russian forces facing the 20th Corps just to the north. But the Russian 15th Corps and nearby 2nd Division needed to be destroyed before the upcoming Russian 13th Corps could provide support. Von Francois' 120 guns unleashed a storm of fire on Uzdau at 0400 on the 27th. At 0500, the German 1st Division advanced from the north, while a brigade of men from the 2nd Division advanced from the south. The other 2nd Division brigade provided overwatch to the right flank, and a Landwehr brigade screened for enemy forces to the south. Russian General Leonid Artamonov, commander of the Russian 1st Corps, was surprised by the attack. Like most everyone else out here, he too had not sent out any forward patrols nor cavalry scouts. His troops, however, were well dug in, and the Germans pushed forward carefully. Artamonov did what he could with what he had. He knew there was a German formation at Lautenburg, so he decided to go after the enemy he could fix. Pulling a brigade from his line and widening the gap between his corps and the devastated Russian 2nd Division, he sent them smashing into the German Landwehr in the village of Skurpien. The Germans were themselves quickly overwhelmed with this surprise attack. The Landwehrmen retreated and called out for help. South of Usedau, the covering brigade of Major General Adalbert von Falk's 2nd Division was hit with a firestorm of small arms and artillery fire 2,000 meters away from the Russian lines. Pushing through the fire with heavy losses, these young and still raw German soldiers quickly lost all discipline. They broke and they ran from the melee. Von Francois' other troops assaulted and seized Usedau, and then turned south to help his other, more beleaguered men. He also informed 8th Army that he was going to push south to southeast. Von Francois began issuing orders for a 3-pronged flanking move that would swing behind the Russians and cut off their retreat. The Germans coming out of Usedau crashed into the Russians, shocking them into a chaotic retreat. Russian Lieutenant General Artemonov threw out orders that inspired nothing but retreat, especially as German artillery pounded Russian formations. The troopers of the Russian First Corps, brave but poorly led, ran south past Soldau near the Polish border. With them went the Russian Second Army's left flank. Northeast of the German First Corps, von Scholz's 20th Corps held the line generally along the River Drevens. Von Scholz gave his neighboring First Corps cautious support because he knew that von Francois was supremely unpredictable. He was also worried about his left flank, and this worry appeared justified when a Russian bombardment opened up on the town of Mulin on that very flank. It was units of the Russian 15th Corps, and Scholz's men soon received orders to turn around from their southward march to the northeast. They would come in behind these Russians and roll them up from back to front. The fighting in Mulin saw a brief breakthrough when the Russians clashed with a brigade of poorly trained German reservists. The commanding general on the scene rode out to his line and found that the line officers had already sealed the breach, but word had already gone out to von Scholz. Von Scholz had another huge worry on his left flank, that of the Russian 13th Corps pushing right past him towards Allenstein. The 13th Corps' commander, Lieutenant General Nikolai Kuyev, had been ordered to Allenstein to help his sister 6th Corps. Kuyev could, however, hear the fighting of his sister 15th Corps to the south, where this latter corps was fighting the German 20th. Inability to communicate with his fellow corps commanders and General Samsonov himself led Kuyev to follow his last given orders. Kuyev's forces seized Allenstein, where he began commandeering food to feed his hungry soldiers. Von Scholz dispatched his 37th Division north to counter Kuyev and his troops, but they were too worn out to be effective. North of the German 20th Corps, von Mackensen and von Bailov were ordered to march south immediately to attack the Russian 2nd Army's now open right flank and rear. Both men needed to deal with the Russians in Allenstein. Shortly after 0200 on the morning of the 28th, a column of Germans from Mackensen's 17th Corps reached Passenheim, a town southeast of Allenstein, and behind the Russians. These younger, active-duty soldiers would be Ostgruppe's main attack formation, while Bailov's reservists would support any and all actions. This met Ludendorff's desire to continue attacking Samsonov's army at every opportunity. Situation reports and updates came in to General Samsonov's headquarters. The news of First Corps' defeat to the south came as a surprise. The news of the 2nd Division's thrashing came as a shock. With the information of these two events, Samsonov and his staff believed the larger German threat was on his left flank. He then issued orders for the next day, the 28th of August. Those southern units were to hold the line as long as they could against what was believed to be the German center. Kluyev's 13th Corps was to combine with the 15th Corps under the command of the latter corps' Lieutenant General Martos and hit what was believed to be the German flank. They would then go on to attack the Germans from the rear. Samsonov also issued orders to his 6th Corps to get them moving towards Passenheim to cover the 2nd Army's right flank. The Russian Army commander hadn't yet received the news that 6th Corps had collapsed and was no longer anywhere near the battle area. In his book, Tannenberg, Clash of Empires, Dennis Showalter argued that it was these orders that set the stage for Major General von Morgan to call for his men to follow the retreating Russians and for the Russian Second Army's disaster in the coming days. Then Lieutenant Colonel Max Hoffmann thought Samsonov should have realized he was facing larger forces than he thought based on how long the German line was as it ran from Uzdal to Mulin. But he didn't. Samsonov also received no news from his front commander Zhilinsky nor Rennenkampf's 1st Army as to what happened to the German troops who'd fought at Gumbinnen. Samsonov had a lot to worry about, and he believed that Rennenkampf must be chasing those defeated Germans into Königsberg or to the west. Coupled with no news of 6th Corps' disaster, he assessed that there was no threat from the north. He concentrated his forces to the south. On the morning of the 28th, Alexander Samsonov moved his headquarters forward to his 15th Corps' HQ. He wanted to reinforce success where he had seen it, and to try to shore up those forces he could still control. Showalter notes that, quote, "critics generally agree that this was the final step in the Second Army's destruction, that Samsonov ceased from that time effectively to command anything," end quote. Between the road from Neidenberg to Yedvabno, the general and his staff switched from cars to horses for the final leg of the journey. They were riding off to their destruction. Questions, comments, or concerns? Please don't hesitate to contact me at verdunpodcast@gmail.com. Get at me on Twitter at WW1podcast. Check out the BFWWP website, FirstWorldWarPodcast.com, for some photos, and check out the Battles of the First World War podcast page on the Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. Talk to you again soon. Take care.